Hi, I'm Susie Larson. Thanks so much for listening to this podcast from Live the Promise. There are many more podcasts available up on the website at myfaithradio.com, and your support makes this possible. Thank you.
Listening to an encore presentation of Live the Promise.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Hour 2 of Live the Promise. So glad you're listening today. Bill Arnold today sitting in for Susie Larson, and I'm excited that you're joining me for Live the Promise. This hour, I'm already very tense about because we're talking to Kathy Cook, who's written a book called Screens and Teens, and it's about connecting with our kids in a wireless world. And the whole idea that we are so addicted now to our smartphones and our iPads and our computers, and we spend our lives looking at screens, and how we connect in today's world is on a smartphone, and we're not talking to each other anymore, and we're having a harder time connecting with our kids. So she is going to give us lots of insight on that, on how to connect with our families in a fast-paced, techie kind of world. So Kathy Cook is the founder and president of Celebrate Kids Incorporated. It's a Texas-based ministry, as well as an international speaker and author. Her books include How Am I Smart? A Parent's Guide to Multiple Intelligences, No More Perfect Kids. You can find her online at CelebrateKids.com, and her influencer page is up at MyFaithRadio.com. Kathy, welcome to the show.
I'm so glad to be here, Bill. Thank you.
Thank you. You know, it's interesting how we create technology, and then it turns around and recreates us.
That's so true.
I mean, would I ever think that I would one day watch TV with my laptop on my lap because as I'm watching sports or something and a player pops up and I want to instantly know when he signed with the team and where he's from, and boom, I'm on my laptop at the same time. I mean, it's like I'm in front of a screen all day long, and I can't believe I am. And I check my phone 120 times a day at least, and that's if I'm planning on nothing happening in my life. So anyway, we can spend the whole hour talking about me and my issues with my smartphone, but I don't think that's the goal of today. We want to talk about what it means to try to connect with your kids, because this is a huge problem. And before
you're not the only one that is focused on the technology.
Yeah. So before we start, Susie always loves to on the show ask the guest to, you know, give us a scripture that's God's been laying on your heart lately.
Do you want one of mine?
Yeah, I could give you one of mine, but. Is there anyone in particular, or?
Well, one that's actually related to the topic of technology, maybe I'll use that one. One of my life verses is Proverbs 14:23. And Proverbs 14:23 says that in all toil there is profit, but mere talk leads only to poverty. So in all hard working or focused labor, in all toil there is profit. Mm-hmm. But mere talk leads only to poverty. And I can be very guilty of talking about the article I have to write, or thinking about doing the dishes. And then I'm amazed at the end of the day when the dishes are dirty in the sink. But the scripture says that it's all hard, persevering, diligent labor that will bring a profit. And I think we need to remember that in our culture that is focused on technology that makes everything seem so easy.
Mm-hmm. I remember growing up as a kid, there was the phone that when you got on the phone, everybody knew that you were on the phone and everybody could pretty much hear what you were saying.
Yep.
You couldn't have any clandestine kind of plans because you couldn't pull it off. And kids today have this whole other world where they can quietly text at night in their room, and they can, you know, nobody makes plans anymore. They make plans on the fly. They walk out the door going, I'm making plans as they evolve.
That wouldn't
fly in my day, Kathy, let me tell you.
That's a good point. And you're right about the phone. I grew up in a home with a great family, and we had one phone in the hallway. So not only could my parents and my brother listen to my side of the conversation, but I knew that I couldn't stay on it forever because there were other people who were maybe trying to call, other people in my family who needed to use the phone.
Mm-hmm.
And so today's kids, not only can they escape to their room and be very private and isolated if they choose and if we let them do that, but then, like you're saying, they can be on it, whether it be talking or surfing or texting. They can be on it all day long.
Yeah.
And it's not healthy.
I mean, kids don't even know what a busy signal is, do they?
They really don't.
No.
Yeah.
So what prompted you to write a book on teens and technology?
You know, thanks for asking that, Bill. I don't think we need another book about technology, per se, but I wanted to write a book about the influence technology is having upon our kids. Because I've been in the ministry now for 24 years, and I travel the world and speak to parents and teachers and kids of all ages, and I was beginning to see patterns around the nation of self-centeredness and isolation and pride and impatience and I was seeing it, and it dawned on me, oh my goodness, I think technology is giving rise to a lot of these negative qualities. Parents who were parenting as well as they knew how, Christian school teachers who were doing an excellent job in excellent schools were also telling me that although they were trying really hard, their kids were increasingly argumentative and complaining and discontent and all these kinds of things. And I began to see the technology as the culprit. And so I wanted to help parents primarily and grandparents understand that although technology is not bad, and I don't bash it in my book and I'm not going to bash it now, the use of it can be really troublesome. Too much of it, when we allow our kids to use it, what do we do instead of technology? All those kinds of things are so relevant.
Mm-hmm. It seems to me that because kids communicate and connect with each other with smartphones, that a smartphone is no longer a luxury. It's an absolute necessity.
That's what they think. You know, you're exactly right. And it really isn't. I think, again, it's a family decision on when a child needs a phone versus wants a phone.
Mm-hmm.
Just because they want it doesn't mean they need it, and nor does it mean that we should give it to them. And if we start giving in to their whining, demanding, complaining when they're 8 and 9, everybody else has one, then what are we going to do when they're 16 and they're demanding something? It's really hard to bring back that slippery slope, but it can be done. And I talk in the book, we can do it. We can win them back from the screens. We'll have to deal with a little bit of pushback, a little bit of anger for a while, perhaps. But a lot of kids have told me they're actually grateful that new policies and boundaries were put into place.
Kathy, did you read the story about the 12-year-old that's up on murder charges?
No, I don't think I did.
This is fascinating. The mom took away her iPhone, and she retaliated by poisoning her.
No, where did that happen?
I don't remember. It's you can just Google Apple phone taken away, child tries to poison mom. She's
okay, I will. Oh,
yeah,
my goodness.
She's in detention right now. She's only 12, but I guess what you do is you don't mess with my phone, according to her.
Right.
And she tried poisoning her mother more than once.
I'm really sad to hear that.
Oh, I am
and
too.
I also go ahead.
No, I am too. It makes me terribly sad. But I saw the story and I thought, well, it'd be interesting because I'll be talking to you and just to get your reaction to that.
You know, my reaction, Bill, I understand it. A lot of these kids, if we've allowed them, and that's our choice again, to use technology as their nurturer, as their babysitter, as their tool and their toy, and we always let them have whatever device they want. They will become addicted, and they don't know how to behave when they don't have it. They don't know how to handle boredom. They don't know what to do with quiet. And one of the things that I really appreciate addressing in my book is that we can't just take away a phone. We have to give them a substitution then of something they can do with their time that will eventually become satisfying, or they really will be angry, and they really don't know how to handle those emotions. It's just sad.
Kathy, that sounds a little pie in the sky. What can you give them? They don't want anything but that phone. So give me an example of something that might satisfy them.
You know, I really appreciate that question. Kids tell me that they want to connect with their parents. Now, they may not behave like they want to, and I mean that.
Yeah.
And they may not go up to mom and dad and say, hey, would you read to me or would you play a game or could we go for a walk? However, what all of the research is saying, and all of us who are out and about doing the work that I do are finding, are kids who are really tired of the loneliness. They really do crave. We're designed to crave boundaries, to crave a deep connection. So I really want parents to understand that you can go for a walk with your kids without your phone. You can drive in the car without anything on and no pods in the ear and look out the window and have a conversation. And initially, there will be pushback. Yet, I've had kids come up to me with tears to say, thank you, I got my daddy back.
Mm. Wow.
Like, I would recommend digital-free zones and digital-free days, which I talk about. And I did that originally thinking that the kids needed to be off of their tech and they needed to rest their brain and enjoy fellowshipping with their parents over a board game or being read to or going to the park or learning how to fish or weeding the garden together. And what actually the kids are telling me is that by implementing digital-free zones and digital-free days, their moms and dads have also had to put down the phone. And I've had so many kids say to me, oh my goodness, my dad has now taught me how to throw a football. That's one of my favorite examples. I've had little girls and boys tell me, my mom let me help her make chocolate chip cookies and it was fun.
Mm-hmm.
And then they'll look at me and they go, you allow the oven, right? And I'm like, yes, you can turn the oven on, you know, because we talk about turning things off and putting them down. And so they've said to me, is the oven okay? So
this is as much about the parents as it is the teens, isn't it? I mean, this has got to be a relationship that we're working in tandem with, because if mom and dad are on the phone all the time, what does that say to the kids?
Exactly. What it says to the kids is that they are in second place.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand, again, the busyness of moms and dads. I get it. But as much as possible to stay off the devices during the kids' waking hours,
mm-hmm.
and let the children know that they matter. A friend of mine instituted a policy when her kids began schooling. This is back in the days of the landline phone. When her kids walked in the door from school, she said to the person on the phone, my kids are home, I'll talk to you later, and hung up the phone.
Wow.
And her kids, from the time that they were in kindergarten, were raised to understand that when they got home, they were their priority. And that mom, all the way through till today, has a 30-minute, you are my priority window. Now, after the 30 minutes, if the kids begin playing outside or begin doing their homework or, you know, the phone would ring, then the mom might choose to engage with someone else.
Mm-hmm.
But for those first 30 minutes, she's saying, I'm so glad you're home. You're my precious
Wow.
You know, child, what can we do together?
Yeah.
I love that.
I do, too. We're talking to Kathy Koch. She's written a book called Screens and Teens. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to have lots more with Kathy. You're listening to Live the Promise. Bill Arnold sitting in today for Susie Larson. We'll be back in just a minute. To Live the Promise, Bill Arnold today sitting in for Susie. We're talking to Kathy Koch. She's written a book called Screens and Teens. And during the break, I was checking my smartphone. Kathy, help me. Just help me. Okay, this is a component of smartphones I want to talk about, because I think this is completely out of control. I mean, it's always fun to take pictures when people had cameras. Now mm-hmm. everyone's got a camera on their smartphone. And this obsession with pictures that are getting on the internet, and people will have up to 600 pictures of themselves on their Facebook page.
Yes.
What are we doing wrong here?
Wow, that's a great way to word the question. We do live in a time and a day when there are things like Facebook, Instagram, Pinterest. We've become a visual culture, but we've also become a lonely, isolated people, and we're trying to win friends and influence people, and we think that we do it by this perfection of the picture, which is just ridiculous, of course.
Mm-hmm.
We're trying to get noticed. We're trying to get liked. It's a really scary time, especially for teens and young adults, to be surrounded by people but to be lonely. And that's actually what's happening with this all this technology and all these pictures. We've got all these quote-unquote friends that follow us. They're not friends. They're people who have chosen to associate with us. They don't really know us. We don't really know them. We're not going to be vulnerable and transparent. So the heart need that God wired into us really isn't being met by that. So we think another picture will help. You know, another picture of my puppy dog will help. Another picture of me at a party will help. And it's a lie. It's one of the, I agree with you, one of the most dangerous things that's happening to us and to our kids, the use of the camera.
Yeah, because kids today are incredibly stressed out with this other element that comes into their life that says you've got to be liked, accepted. You've got to have the right pictures on Facebook,
mm-hmm.
and it's causing these kids to just feel overwhelmed. And then they're up probably much later than they should be, checking their status, updating stuff, connecting with people just until the last minute they fall asleep.
Oh, you're so right. You just connected so many things there. And what I'm concerned about with the camera is we're treating children like they are performers on a stage, and we are their audience. And we're even treating ourselves that way if we're doing, you know, the selfie, or we're at a very legitimate event and we say, hey, take a picture.
Mm-hmm.
But what's my concern for the kids is that they are learning at a young age that it's their job to be good enough for mom to want to take a picture so she can post it on Facebook so she can look good. And one of the examples I talk about in my book is a 5-year-old boy who was on the playground who did something really clever. And, you know, when I was a kid, I would have said, you know, did you like that, mom? Or I would have said, I'm going to do that again. But this little boy looked at his mom and said, was that good enough for Facebook?
Ooh.
So he's already learning at a very young age that it's his role to be good enough to please mom for this outside audience. And she's never told him that. He just picked up on that by the way that she's always whipping out her phone. And again, I'm not opposed to pictures. If you go to my Facebook page, there are pictures there.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the idea that we don't need to tell the world everything we're doing. And of course, for our young people to understand that it's a fake world on social media. Most of us are not going to post pictures of the messy dining room table and of the messed up day we had. We're only going to talk about or post pictures of that which is good and beautiful.
You haven't been on my Facebook page then.
Oh, so you're vulnerable. That's good.
But let's talk about the young kids' security. I mean, they're so desperate to feel like they belong, and they're so desperate to be liked. And this technology is just twisting them, isn't it?
You know, it is. We should have our security in people who are trustworthy, certainly God, and then trustworthy people here on earth. But we've got kids today secure in things being fast, secure in things being available, secure in always being able to win a game, because if you play an app or a game, you can always get a higher score or win the next game. So we've got kids who are secure in that. They're secure in how many people they're connected with rather than in the quality of the relationships. And we're not able to discern better for them because their eyes are down looking at a handheld device. So security is a real issue.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I agree.
And then what are we doing to educate kids on text messaging and sending pictures and even understanding that there's a certain tone in emails that exist? And these kids are they're getting emotionally hijacked because they're getting an email that's destroying them. And they don't even know really what the tone and context is, because that's the problem with emails, is there is none of that.
That's true. And you're right that it's an email. And then it's, of course, also on posting on social media as well, isn't it?
Yeah.
Where we tell a partial story, or there's no context, or there's no tone of voice and facial expression. And what's really awkward is, like, for those of us who are older, before we had technology and the cell phone and social media, we knew how to converse and we knew how to read body language, most of us. We understood what the eyes meant, and we looked for the smirk or the smile. Young people are being nurtured more by technology than by people. Their eyes are looking down at the device in their hand, so they're not even having a chance to learn the conversation and the eye-to-eye contact, the iron sharpening iron stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So when you realize that they've never had the experience, coupled with the shortness of the message that we're tweeting or that we're texting or that's in an email, you're exactly right. And then they don't have the resiliency emotionally because we're not available to them to help them because we're also on our handheld device. It's a mess, Bill. What are we going to do? It's just a mess.
I'm not the answer, man, let me tell you. Kathy, let's talk a little bit about the five keys in the life of a teen that you talk about. One is, I'm the center of my own universe. I deserve to be happy all the time. I must have choices. I am my own authority. Information is all I need, so I don't need teachers. Kaboom!
Yeah, these are the five lies.
Yeah.
Really, the reason that I wrote the book was to expose what I believe is happening to the beliefs and the behaviors of our young people. Their brain has been wired by the technology differently than those of us who are older. So the first lie you mentioned, I am the center of my own universe. You know, you and I were talking about the phone before. When we were young and the phone rang, we had to answer it because we didn't know who was there.
Mm-hmm.
Now, today when my phone rings, I can look at it and decide, oh, I'm not in the mood to talk to her.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm at home and I have a landline and it's connected to my TV, my TV will show me who it is.
Yeah. Kathy, how about this? When the phone rings as a kid, Arnold Residence, Bill speaking.
You
know, who gives out that kind of information nowadays?
Yeah, that's true, too. Yeah. And then there's things like when I was a child, you had to buy the whole record album if you wanted one song. Today,
totally.
You can go to a website, purchase a song for a buck, and instantly have it.
Mm-hmm.
You can take a picture and digitally correct it and then print it. In the old days, you took a whole roll of film, waited a week, paid for every picture, whether they were good or not.
Right.
So all of those changes, none of which are bad, I'm glad for those
changes. Me too.
I mean, it's amazing that we live in this day and this time.
Mm-hmm.
But for young people, they're believing that they can make the world revolve around them, and they are the center of the universe, and they can make things happen the way they want them to happen, and they're ultimately in control.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to say to the parents listening, you know, thank you for listening. Sometimes we make the mistake of celebrating our kids too much. Like, my ministry is called Celebrate Kids. I'm all about affirming children. But if you put them at the center of your world all of the time with your Facebook posts, like if you talk more about them on Facebook than yourself, if all the conversations are about them and their day and you never talk about you and your day, then they believe that they're the center of not just their world, but yours, and that's damaging.
Kathy, what is it safe to say that in that kind of situation, kids will never learn how to speak to adults because they've just been fussed over their whole life? They've been the center of the universe, and everything they do is great, and, you know, that's just not true.
Exactly. They won't know how to talk to adults, you're right. They will develop pride. They can become unteachable. They can become very judgmental. And check this out, Bill. If everybody in the room thinks that they are the center of their own universe, why would they talk to anybody?
Yeah, no kidding.
The only reason they talk to someone is so that that person can convince them that, in fact, you are the center.
Mm-hmm.
So they look for people to serve them and people to uplift them, and they're never going to hang out with people who they think are better than them.
Mm-hmm.
So then they lose the role model and they lose the authority, and oh, my goodness, it's a mess. When I talk to kids about this, it's really interesting. They're on their edge of their seat, and they begin to get it, and because they're uncomfortable. If they're believers, they know they're not the center. God is. And they haven't been able to pinpoint why they feel uneasy. And they're actually grateful. Some of them have said, thank you for reminding me I'm not the center. I need to change my behavior.
Well, we're going to if we have callers out there that want to give us a call and ask Kathy a question about how to connect with their teen, or if they've had a strategy that's failed or a strategy that has succeeded and want to share it, we would welcome that call, 1-877-933-2484. I believe we have a copy of the book, Screens and Teens. I have a copy myself, but I'm not giving it up. I've got it fairly dog-eared already. And when we come back, Kathy, I want to talk about the deep core needs, security, identity, belonging, purpose, and competence that all kids need. And they're getting it from digital right now, which is wrong. So we'll be back in just a minute. You're listening to Live the Promise. Bill Arnold in today for Susie. Be back in just a minute. Bill Arnold today sitting in for Susie Larson. We're talking to Kathy Koch, who's written a book called Screens and Teens, Connecting with Our Kids in a Wireless World. Earlier on in the show, we had talked about a girl whose mother took away her iPhone, and she turned around and tried to poison her. And this is in Colorado, Kathy. And she put bleach in her water on two occasions.
Mm.
Just amazing, the don't mess with my phone. Yeah, it's, you know, but to some degree, kids are kind of helpful when it comes to figuring out technology as well. I mean, I got a new iPhone and I needed a question answer, so I went into the Apple store and they said, well, you got to make a Genius Bar appointment. And I said, I don't really need a Genius Bar. I just need a someone slightly smarter than me bar appointment. So they sent me over to this other little area and this kid helped me, this student, really, you know, very nice kid, just graduated from preschool. And help me with all my problems. But so they are helpful at times when it comes to technology. But for the most part, they're completely addicted to it, and it's hindering their development. Because you have said that the core needs are security, identity, belonging, purpose, and competence.
Mm-hmm.
And we get those in healthy ways when we connect with people face-to-face and in real relationships. And nowadays, kids are turning to technology and the digital culture to get these needs met. And it's making trouble.
Exactly, because it won't work, and there'll be a desperation in them, including this young girl in Colorado, and they don't know how to process that desperation. So we need, as the mature adults, to model for them appropriate use of technology and the fact that we are choosing to meet our core needs in God and in people here on earth who we've judged as being trustworthy. So, security, who can I trust, not what can I trust. Security not placed in the quick apparatus or the game I can always win. Identity, who am I? Knowing who I am, knowing who God says I am, valuing more of what my mom and dad and grandparents and siblings and teachers say I am than somebody on the internet who I don't even know. Not being manipulated by the lyric of a CD or some Hollywood starlet that I'm following on Twitter that mom doesn't even know I'm following, but really knowing in my knowing who I am, my strengths, my challenges, what my goals are for my future. We can have a limited identity because of social networking if we only post about a certain aspect of our lives. For instance, people who friend me on Facebook may do that because they've heard me speak somewhere. I actually intentionally post on Facebook about the rest of my life, some of it anyway, so that they understand I'm a complete human being and I go to the grocery store like they do and I'm not just always, you know, standing behind a microphone somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Belonging, who wants me, needs to be met in God and in people here on earth who know us and want us because of who we are. Belonging can be facilitated through social media. You know, I connected with friends on social media, and our friendship has actually been strengthened by the ease of our connection. And then there are new people who joined me on social media that I've actually gotten to know and actually consider to be friends at a different level. So it's not all bad. However, what's dangerous about our young people is some of them not knowing who they are, identity. They let the people they hang with, belonging, tell them who they are, and then it all gets messed up. Or they look at the like factor, and they decide that the people who like them they're going to belong to. Well, the people who like them might be very manipulative and might be wanting something from them, and that's why they behave that way.
And
so that's damaging.
Yeah. What is it going to do to their progress and their development in their identity? I would imagine it's going to slow it down.
It can slow it down. It can stifle it. You know, I believe that we should have a complete identity, that we should have an intellectual, emotional, social self, a spiritual self, and a physical self, that we should know a lot about who we are because identity controls behavior. So if we only know a slice of our existence, we won't know how to expand, and that influences negatively our purpose and our competence.
Mm-hmm.
So I think social media and technology in general and the isolation that it creates can negatively influence identity. I agree.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Doesn't it bring to a kid's mind faster than anything the idea who wants me? Who wants to be, who wants to like me? Who wants, I mean, I think we mm-hmm. naturally have that as a tendency as a kid anyway. It's like, who are you going to make friends with? And you might make two or three friends and, you know, if you're not very social, but you get exposed to the digital media and it's just like a tsunami.
You know, it is, and it's not real because
right.
we're not vulnerable and transparent. We're
Tsunamis
not
are real, but not this.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And so that is potentially going to be damaging to them. And I don't know, frankly, what the future holds for them if we don't connect with them. That's why I wrote the book, for parents to connect through technology. Like, play Wii together and have a great time. Watch cooking shows with your 8-year-old daughter who likes to cook and cook dinner with her. If your son likes soccer, find some YouTube videos of great soccer kicks. And I'm not saying that, you know, technology should be avoided at all costs. It actually can increase the connection that we have with our kids, and it gives us something new to talk about. But too often, it is the divider, and it's the multitasking, and we're not really fully present with our kids, and ultimately that's going to do damage to our relationship.
So when kids are feeling, when they spend a great amount of screen time, and do parents try to regulate how much screen time they have? Are they saying, you have 1 hour tonight on the computer? I mean, is that only going to make things worse? Or how do you allow them to have screen time and maintain control?
Yeah, that's a great question, Bill. And it's, again,
I didn't ask it very well, but
well, it's a family decision, so it's hard for me to say for sure. Some kids today, if their schools are using a lot of textbooks on screens or a lot of screen activities, kids are already using the allotted minutes or more that the government recommends at school. And then they come home and they game and they're on social media and they're on their phone, and so it's a mess. The key is to start as young as you can, to avoid it as long as you can, to limit it, I believe, Monday through Friday, and then to also have boundaries on the weekend. Certainly things like gaming and surfing the net, the web, you just don't know for sure what your kids are going to find. There's a lot of evidence that gaming can create, anger and self-centeredness and the need for power. So we really do need to be careful. Limits are good. I think the key that I talk about in my book is what else we can do with them. So in addition to technology, at the right amount of time, then let's read together and play together and explore outside together and get dirty together and ask good questions to stimulate meaningful conversations that create memories for our kids.
Kathy, what would you say if a parent says to you or the child says, yeah, I understand that I'm a child of the King and I have a relationship with Jesus, but nobody likes me on Facebook, so what's the point?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
it's the big barking dog in the room.
The first thing I would say to a child like that is I would say, keep talking.
Hmm.
I would want to know more. The first thing the parents want to do is interrogate. And if children feel like problems we're trying to solve, they're not going to feel safe. So I know that our heart is to help them, and praise God that we were available and they asked us the question or they admitted to us, you know, I know that God loves me, He created me, but man, I don't feel loved anywhere else. Praise God that you were available. Thank them for being honest and say, keep talking, tell me more, and wait and be quiet.
Mm-hmm.
And let your child share more about how it feels or a specific example that made them feel that way. And then, depending upon the age of the child, what I would recommend we do is say, are you asking for help or are you simply complaining? Because some kids aren't ready for help yet. They just want it to be heard mm-hmm. in the middle of their anxiety. And I totally respect that.
Mm-hmm.
Some kids are going to go, no, I just wanted you to know I'm really struggling, but let me think it through a bit. And let them and watch them and be available and look for the teachable moment. And if they do come to us and they say, no, Dad or Mom, you know, what do you think? Then we say things like, well, sweetheart, what God says is true and unchanging and accurate and right because He's your creator who made you intentionally, designed, you know, for His glory. And that's why we read the scripture together. And that's why I've recommended that you stop at the end of every day and at the beginning of every day to read what He says about you.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to look at who's saying things about you that you're questioning. Are they believers? Are they Christ followers? Do you know them? Do they even know you? And then we teach our kids how to reject the lie, how to really know when they've heard a lie and do what I call the whiplash in the brain where, hey, I'm not, you know, that's what you say, but this is what God says, and I'm going with what God says.
Yeah, no kidding. Now, you've been working with kids for over 25 years in ministry. Is that correct?
My ministry is 24 years, but 24. I've been working with kids for 30 plus, right?
Okay. So you've obviously established and identified some truths about teens that are really positive and kind of fun to talk about. So I don't want to just talk about scary stuff. I want to talk about some key truths that you have discovered about teens. One is teens' relationships cause beliefs. And I don't know exactly what that means, but so help me with that.
This is so interesting. I appreciate you bringing it up. Those of us who are older have beliefs that cause relationships. So we know what we believe, and that motivates us to seek out certain people. So for me, as a born-again believer in the Lord Jesus, I seek out Christ followers. So the person who cuts my lawn and the person who cuts my hair, they're Christians. I mm-hmm. hire Christians, and I hang out with Christians, the people on my board, the people I go to dinner with. It doesn't mean that I don't have unsaved people in my circle of friends. However, the people that I hang with are going to be like me.
Mm-hmm.
But young people nurtured by technology, where the number of people that they connect with is so important to them, have what I call relationship-based beliefs. So they relate, and therefore they believe. So if they're hanging out today with a bunch of Christ followers, it's all about Jesus, and they're going to get baptized next Sunday. But if something happens on Monday, something happens on Wednesday, they hear another story, they listen to a song on the radio, somebody says something negative about the God of the Bible, then they're all of a sudden not interested in Christ anymore.
Hmm.
And we're like, what happened?
Mm-hmm.
What happened was we allowed them to relate to people who were maybe not for them, not healthy influences. The bad news is that they can be sold out quickly to a lie. The good news is that if you have a prodigal, if you have somebody who has slipped away from your values and your passions and your God of the Bible, pray that they would be surrounded by people who believe what you believe so that their beliefs would be transformed by those new relationships.
Okay, that's interesting. And then teens want to improve the world.
This is so exciting to me. One of the things that technology has done is expose our kids at a younger age than we were to the brokenness of the world. You know, when I was a kid, I heard about people starving in Africa. Today's kids can watch people starve in Africa on documentaries, mm-hmm. on ads, on social media, on the television. And if they're raised in a hopelessness, they can really become overwhelmed by that, and they do very little. When they're raised in a hopeful culture where they're raised by parents who believe that we were created to impact the world for good, these kids at a very young age can decide that they're going to change the world. And they can be 7 raising money for cancer awareness. They can be 13 and
That's
be collecting coats for the homeless up where it's cold where you guys live. And at a younger and younger age, they want to be influences on the world. That influences, mm-hmm. by the way, how they view school. Because if they have a passion and a thing that they want to do to change the world, and school and church are not relevant to that issue, they can very quickly become apathetic.
Yeah.
And it's a potential negative, but the really good thing is that they do want to change the world, and we can plug into that.
That's excellent. Okay, 2 down, 3 more to go. We're going to take a little short break. When we come back, we're going to have a couple more, one more segment with Kathy Koch. You're listening to Live the Promise. Bill Arnold in today for Susie. I know you're missing her. I know you're missing her big. But I'm doing my best. I'm trying. Sticking with us today. We've got one more segment with Kathy Koch. She's written a book called Screens and Teens, and we got to figure out how to connect better with our kids in a wireless world because they are spending a lot of time looking at screens. And Kathy, you've listed 5 key truths about teens, and we started with the first 2, which are teens' relationships cause beliefs and teens want to improve the world. Next up is teens are creative, innovative, and entrepreneurial.
It's so true because on the internet and on the World Wide Web, they've observed so many different ways to do the same old thing, if you will. And so they are problem solvers, many of them, and they want to do things differently and creatively. That's both good and potentially negative because they might say to a homeschooling parent or to a teacher or a pastor, you know, can't we do something different today? So it can be one of the things that causes them to become bored quickly, but ultimately it's a good quality about them.
Okay. Another one is their security is in technology.
Yeah, and we've talked
That's
about
scary.
This.
Yeah, I know, but you know, let's go back because this is a big one.
Here's what I would say. When all of us were little, there was something we were secure in, a blanket, a stuffed teddy bear, a puppy dog. One of the jokes I've read is that if Charles Schulz was drawing the Peanuts cartoon today, rather than that one character having a blanket, he'd have a phone.
Yeah, Linus would have a smartphone.
Linus
for
would have a
sure.
phone.
Would not
right.
be a little blanky.
Right. And yeah. so it's just what it is. And so when we need to take it away, we need to prepare them for that. So the earlier we start, the better.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And they're tech addicted, of course, these kids. And they're tired and they're a little bit overwhelmed and stressed out and you know, my goodness, that's not healthy either.
No, it's such a negative part of my book. But the good news is that the rest of the book is full of solutions. They are addicted because their brain has been wired mm-hmm. by the technology that we're letting them use. They're tired because they're doing it at night. They're not sleeping as well, nor are we because of the glow of the screen and the speed of technology and what that's doing to our brain waves. They are stressed and overwhelmed. It's really interesting. They're stressed and overwhelmed by all the information that's available that they don't know how to process. And they're stressed and overwhelmed by all the choices that they want to make, but they choose for happiness, and sometimes happiness doesn't work. So then when they choose and it doesn't work, then there's additional stress. They are depressed. Unfortunately, there's evidence that this generation is the greatest stressed and depressed generation in our history.
Mm-hmm.
It's partly the isolation. It's partly that they're trying to work life with their technology rather than with their dad, and that's just a sad thing.
Mm-hmm.
And they're escaping. The suicide rate is ridiculous. It's very frightening.
Mm-hmm.
They're escaping into the technology, the very thing that's causing them their depression. This is where moms and dads and others who love kids need to apologize if we've allowed them to get addicted, if you will, and we need to model appropriately for them and stand up and say, you know, I am so sorry that I've allowed you to use this as many minutes as I have, but I've observed your anger, I've observed your isolation, I've been, you know, reading some books that have caused me to believe some things differently, I heard a radio interview, we're going to take back the screens, we're going to take you back, you're too important to us, we're not going to allow your heart to be changed by these tools, come back. And then we, as the adults, we're mature, and we handle their short anger. We handle the fact that for a while they don't like us. You know what? It's not about that. It's about raising kids to the glory of God, and sometimes that means that we have to make some changes and we have to apologize.
Mm-hmm.
I hope that comes across right. I love kids. I love parents. We need to do it well, and we can do it better than we've been doing it, some of us.
Mm-hmm. What about parents that try to monitor their kids' activity in terms of hacking into their Facebook accounts or their email accounts and figuring out what their passwords are and doing some of that? Is that dangerous? Is it smart? What's your feelings on that?
I think it's totally appropriate. I think it's essential. Okay. I don't think your kids should be allowed on any platform without you having their passwords. It's a requirement. They don't get an account. And if you find out that they've changed something without your permission, they're done. That's a consequence that lasts for a while. And I also think we say things like, this is my phone I'm letting you use. This is not your phone.
Mm-hmm.
I've purchased it. I'm paying for the insurance. I'm letting you use it. Use it wisely. And absolutely. Now, here's the key, in my opinion. If someone's listening and they have young children, we need to start when they're young monitoring what they do in their spare time, who they're hanging out with, what books they're checking out for the library. As long as our children see us from the day they're born being on their side and monitoring them because we love them, and it's not a lack of trust for them, it's that we live in a difficult world and there are people out there who are going to take advantage of us. So now if we can't trust them because of the decisions they've made, hello, the consequence of your choice is that I will check up on everything you say.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't want me to check up on you anymore, then start being a truth talker.
Yeah.
Because that's just the way the world works.
Yeah.
So if we start it when they're young, they won't resent it so much. And it's not because of technology. It's just because this is how parenting happens.
Mm-hmm. We're talking to Kathy Cook. She's written a book called Screens and Teens. And Kathy, talk a little bit about the whole idea of the bullying that goes on and the ways in which kids' lives just get shredded because they get bullied online, and you know, people by nature can be big cowards online because you write stuff that you'd never say in person.
Right. It's stressful, isn't it? And
oh my,
to
yeah.
watch it happen to someone is certainly, it rips at our hearts when we recognize what's going on. We need to make, we can only control what we can control.
Mm-hmm.
We can't control the other kids. So we need to do the best that we can with our children, and we need to make sure that they know how to respond appropriately if they feel that they're being bullied and picked on and lied about. I've had a lot of kids tell me that they like it when their moms and dads close their social media accounts for a while because they're being damaged by the lie.
Mm-hmm.
It can be really stressful because now they feel left out. They don't get the jokes because they're not on Instagram and they didn't see the thing that everybody looked at last night.
Mm-hmm.
But we've got to protect our kids. That's our job.
Yeah.
So again, do what you can with the kids that you're responsible for, and trust that somebody will do the same thing with the other kids.
Mm-hmm. Kathy, I have another question here for you, because let's say there's someone at home and they're thinking, all right, how do I do a health check on the technology in my house? How do I make my household more tech savvy and healthy? What is there a recommendation you have for the families at home that are going, all right, how do we improve situations?
Wow. Read my book.
Okay, definitely. Screens and Teens.
Yeah, thanks.
By Kathy Cook. And we'll make that available on the website if you need information about it.
I appreciate that so much.
Oh, yeah.
Gary Chapman and Arlene Pelican are also Moody authors, and they wrote the excellent book Growing Up Social.
Mm-hmm.
And Growing Up Social is targeted more to parents of young children, although my book is relevant for everyone. And in their book, they do deal more with the boundaries and things like that. Net Nanny is a great service for, I think it's netnanny.com, and it is a service that many people recommend for monitoring what your kids are doing on the internet and on their devices. There are certainly many, many programs that are available. Yeah, we need to be aware. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. You've got a quote in your book that says, we want our teens to adopt a Christian worldview that puts God at the center of the universe rather than making self-centered decisions. We want them to filter everything through what they know about God. Trusting Christ isn't just about being in heaven the day we die. It's about living with and for him. As we wrap things up, elaborate on that a little bit.
Oh, my goodness.
It's so good.
I don't know what else to say.
Yeah, I know. It's like we can leave it at that.
Yeah, you know, if we're Christ followers, and if we have said to our children that God matters and the Bible matters and prayer matters, then we need to model that. And we need to make sure that we let them know that we're making decisions regarding their technology use because we're putting God first. Don't make him the big bad guy. That's not what I'm saying. But, man, stand up for your faith. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. All right. And I know there's somebody listening today that absolutely is in a fragmented relationship with one of their kids because of the technology issue that's going on. Can you give him or her a word of hope for reconnecting with their kids?
Yeah. Thank you for listening. Thank you for believing that there's more.
Mm.
Many kids have said to me, I'm grateful. So, again, they're going to push back, but stand up and handle it and do what's right. I'm grateful that you want to reconnect and grateful that you care enough to want that relationship to be healthier. Don't feel shame or blame for yesterday. Look forward with hope. The things that we've been talking about on the radio that are new ideas to you, praise God for them. And don't berate yourself thinking, why didn't I know this last week? It's okay. No blame or shame for yesterday. God has grace, and I want you to move forward with hope.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. You know, the landscape changes all the time, doesn't it?
It does.
I mean, every time you wake up, there's another new app that kids have put on their phone. And you don't even know what it is or how it works, and so it's crazy. We've been talking to Dr. Kathy Cook today about her book, Screens and Teens, Connecting with Our Kids in a Wireless World. And station manager let me know that I pronounced your name incorrectly once or twice, and I will not be getting my stipend today.
So I totally understand.
You live and learn, and that was part of the pain. But you've been listening to Live the Promise. Thanks for listening today, Kathy. Thanks for being such an interesting, engaging guest. We love this book, and we want to encourage all of our listeners to get a copy of it, Screens and Teens. This is Bill Arnold, who have been sitting in for Susie. And Susie, I hope you're having a great day. And God bless everybody. Thanks for listening.